Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 7th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Very well. And D.R., as I say every week, it's great to have you here.
Thanks.
So, D.R., this was a big historical week. Let me begin by saying, everyone's heard of the filibuster. It's not so clear what a filibuster is, but the filibuster is a parliamentary device in the U.S. Senate, which considers itself the oldest deliberative body in the world. Anyway, the filibuster is this arcane rule about letting debate continue until there's some number of senators all agree that we're going to stop debating, right? So they have a vote, mm-hmm. not just about the topic at hand, but they have a vote about whether or not they're going to stop talking about the matter at hand. Mm-hmm. And in the past, that has been a rather high number. So I think sometime in the 1940s, it was set to be 60 votes in order to end the debate. And that's called cloture, right? Where mm-hmm. you're saying, okay, we're not going to talk about this anymore. We're just going to now have the vote. So that's just in case anyone didn't know what filibuster means. I don't even know where the word comes from. Do you know where the word comes from? Filibuster?
Off the top of my head, I do not. But
it sounds like one of those southern sort of 1810 kind of words. What you do up behind the barn. Anyway, you know why we're talking about the filibuster? It's because recently the U.S. Senate basically amended its own rules sort of as a the ends justifying the means. They changed the rules in order to allow Mr. Gorsuch to become a Supreme Court justice. Right, D.R.? Mm-hmm. Tell me the story there. What happened?
That's correct. The filibuster was busted as Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell pulled a Harry Truman and exercised what he calls what is known as the nuclear option, basically changing the rules of the Senate to allow a confirmation of a Supreme Court justice with a raw majority of 51 votes. There was the usual partisan split in terms of the vote to sort of exercise the nuclear option, all 52 Republicans going to push the red button and all 48 Democrats voting no. So this appears to clear a path for the confirmation of Supreme Court possible future Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch.
Right. And I think that, I mean, there's any fair-minded person would look at a long history of increasing partisanship of the court, which dates back to the time, I guess the real time was when this guy named Bork was, became a verb, right? He got borked mm-hmm. in the 1980s, and the Democrats did that. And since then, it has been an increasingly bitter campaign. And in fact, the Democrats did away with this filibuster rule for judicial nominations beneath the Supreme Court. They did that as recently as 2008, 2009, I think?
2013, actually.
2013, okay. I think that the unfortunate thing from my perspective is that, and I think it's driven by the conservative side, but maybe that's my bias, is that there's mm-hmm. this increasing long-term design strategy to put very strongly opinionated conservative justices on the Supreme Court and not just get people that are kind of in the middle that wander back and forth, but they want a real strong majority, and they have been working on that since Judge Bork. And mm-hmm. it appears they've succeeded in some level by having this Gorsuch guy on the court. They're cementing a very conservative outlook. Mm-hmm. It seems to me, if you look, Gorsuch looks like he's the Supreme Court justice from Central Casting, right? Mm-hmm. He's got the perfect Judge Parker hair and a very nice demeanor. By all accounts, a very personable guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And very morally pure, I'm sure. But I think that that's not so much the issue. And he's also, apparently, by all accounts, a very smart guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But smart doesn't mean, can mean a lot of things.
Yeah. Scalia was smart, and look what happened.
Yeah. I mean, I think that just to sort of be clear, the problem, so there are three problems that I have with Mr. Gorsuch, who presumably now is going to be on the court. But mm-hmm. One of the main problems is that he subscribes to a judicial philosophy, all right? So the judicial philosophy is the basis for making these decisions that you come into. How do you interpret the facts? His philosophy is in line with a very strange philosophy that basically says the following thing, and I'm trying to channel Emily Bazelon, who had a great article in the New York Times this past Sunday. But the bottom line is that Gorsuch is a proponent of a philosophy that claims that Congress cannot delegate to an agency the ability to make regulations.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that it is, and this dates back to the New Deal, if you believe this article by Emily Bazelon, mm-hmm. dates back to the New Deal, where all the New Deal programs were so busy, Congress turned over the responsibility for implementing the details of the law to an agency, and that's where you get regulations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to have been made settled law even by 1940. It was all done. I mean, people weren't arguing about it. But nowadays, mm-hmm. These are the same people that try to convince us that the Second Amendment means you have a personal right to carry a firearm. I mean, that mm-hmm. same philosophical mindset now says that Congress was unconstitutionally delegated its legislative power. It unconstitutionally gave, say, to the EPA the right to decide how much carbon is going to be in the air. And
mm-hmm.
that's the terrifying part of Mr. Gorsuch being on the Supreme Court, that
mm-hmm.
his philosophy is such that the EPA shouldn't do anything unless Congress tells them how many percent of CO2 should be in the air. Right? Did you see anything like that? Yeah, I mean, do you have any reaction to that kind of, I don't know, that's not a good thing for anybody. I mean, the environment, in addition to the environment, there's lots of regulation out there.
And as Bazelon notes, this is a philosophy that Justice Clarence Thomas also embraces, the idea that the government, in essence, has no constitutional role to try to solve any sort of social problem, that the government should just simply stand aside and remain silent as social problems fester. And if the social problems, destroy the society, que sera, sera. It is this sort of a very odd and strange reasoning that Thomas embraces, that to a certain extent Scalia embraces, and that Gorsuch absolutely embraces.
It's a bad thing. I think that going back to the question of the U.S. Senate, which prides itself on being deliberative and having a high degree of comity as opposed to mm-hmm. comedy, these guys are now at a point where, I mean, the filibuster looks like a stupid rule, right? It looks mm-hmm. like it's an arbitrary rule and, it doesn't make any sense. But it represents the impulse to reach consensus, that even with the minority, you have to make a deal with the minority in order to get to that sort of more than 60 votes. And
mm-hmm.
that forces the Senate to be the great deliberative body that it is. And by taking
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing away, it cheapens the authority of the Senate and, in fact, individual senators, right? Because they can't,
mm-hmm.
and it turns into something like the House of Representatives, where the Speaker calls the shot, sets the schedule, tells everyone when they're going to vote, and everyone shows
mm-hmm.
up and votes, right?
Exactly. And it's interesting, this could, to the extent that McConnell did this in order to get somebody who would be favorable to McConnell's preferred industry onto the court, this could be the destroyer disguised as savior for people like McConnell, because if we have a situation now where if the president and the Senate is of the same party, and with a raw majority, you can get whatever Supreme Court nominee the president wants onto the court, under a different scenario, that can mean that you could have a president and a Senate with a bare majority get onto the court somebody who is much more supportive of the idea that regulatory authority should play a strong role in fighting issues such as pollution. So right. this could be something that turns around and bites them, you know, right on the behind.
We can only hope. Years. I mean, yeah, the sword cuts both ways. So I guess without rehearsing all the Gorsuch stuff, because it's essentially a done deal. The other two reasons that I'm personally upset about it is that, number one, this is a hypocritical action on the part of the Senate because they effectively filibustered Obama's pick, right, mm-hmm. Mr. Garland, for a year, right? Wouldn't even mm-hmm. talk to the guy, right? And they were prepared, if Hillary Clinton had become president, they were prepared to filibuster all of Hillary Clinton's picks, right? Mm-hmm. But now mm-hmm. they have this moral high ground and they pretend to... Anyway, so there's that. And then the third thing that really bugs me about it is that Comrade Trump... Right, who increasingly looks like he is an agent of, you know, at least heavily influenced by Russian influences, let's say Mr. Putin, that he mm-hmm. gets to pick this crazy guy for the Supreme Court who will be on there for the next 30 years. I mean, mm-hmm. Gorsuch is only 49 years old. I mean, he's there for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So it's
But he will go down in history as the first Supreme Court appointee placed onto the court by Putin.
Yes, right. We'll need an asterisk after his name. So anyway, Gorsuch is on the court. Let me just conclude the discussion of Mr. Gorsuch by saying that if this stuff upsets you, please mark your calendar to vote in November 2018, because the only way we're going to change anything is when you vote. Marching doesn't matter. Voting matters, right? Mm. You're going to scare the bejesus out of these people that are in office and make sure they know that you're going to vote. So anyway,
or as I always say, the most important march is the march to the ballot box.
Absolutely. Right. Yes. So we've got Mr. Gorsuch asterisk on the Supreme Court, but we still have the Clean Power Plan. So just to remind everyone about this little legal story, all right, the Clean Power Plan is the EPA's regulation that's proposed under Obama. About a year ago, just before he kicked the bucket, Mr. Scalia put a legal hold on the implementation of Obama's Clean Power Plan. And Obama's Clean Power Plan is now in front of the Ninth District Court in D.C., which is just below the Supreme Court on which the newly appointed Mr. Gorsuch asterisk will be sitting. So, tell me, dear, what's the state of play for the Clean Power Plan now that Trump is in? He's tried to rescind the Clean Power Plan through executive order. You've got General Beauregard Sessions there at the Justice Department, and now you've got Mr. Gorsuch. I mean, what's happening with the Clean Power Plan?
Well, right now the Clean Power Plan is still tied up in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. The EPA and the Justice Department filed a legal motion asking the D.C. Circuit Court to basically hold off on making any decision as EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt reworks and waters down the Clean Power Plan. However, a coalition of 17 attorneys general, including New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman and Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey, they've filed a lawsuit urging the D.C. Circuit to go ahead and make the decision, not to delay the decision, because of the urgency of this matter. And the point of this lawsuit is also to get the court to reaffirm what the U.S. Supreme Court held in 2007 in Mass versus EPA, that the EPA has a legal authority to regulate greenhouse gases. So essentially what Schneiderman, Healey, and the other attorneys general are saying is that it is wrong for the EPA and the Justice Department to try to stop proceedings, and they're urging the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals to go ahead with the proceedings and ultimately to render a decision one way or the other on the legality of the Clean Power Plan.
And I think that's a good argument. I think that because, as we've argued in the past, the unraveling of the Clean Power Plan by Mr. Pruitt and Comrade Trump, it's going to take a long time, right? Mm-hmm. And so if 2 or 3 years from now, I mean, the plan could be legitimate for the next 2 or 3 years, even as these jokers try to knock it down. Mm-hmm. So I was just going to say, in passing, this week is the anniversary of two things. I guess it's the anniversary of America's entry into World War I, and it's mm-hmm. 10 years since Mass versus EPA, right, Dear?
Yes,
I thought you were going to mention that. I beat you to the punch.
Yes, it was on April 2nd, 2007, the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 that the EPA indeed had the authority to regulate greenhouse gases. And
the responsibility.
Exactly. And as we discuss, if you know, the importance of Supreme Court nominees, if you look at Scalia's dissent, Scalia denied the science. If you read really closely into his dissent, and it goes to show you the importance of not having people who deny science on the highest court in the land. If you had had just one judge go the anti-science side, that would have been a disaster on multiple levels.
Yeah. So I guess the other two sort of, since we're on legal topics here, D.R., I'll throw them up there and you can comment on them. One is that a judge in Texas threw out Exxon's lawsuit to try and stop Massachusetts Attorney General Healey's case against Exxon. It's a good thing. The judge in Texas said, no, this case does not belong here. It belongs up in New York because it's a shorter flight for Attorney General Healey down to visit Mr. Schneiderman in New York. That's a good thing. And the second thing is, we'll put up the link to it, there have been multiple lawsuits brought against the president's executive order. Right, so the president has issued an executive order on immigration, which got squashed down in the court for various reasons. And now there are additional lawsuits trying to oppose his unilateral reversal of the Clean Power Plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen anything like that?
Definitely. There are a number of different lawsuits basically challenging what President Obama is doing. I mean, what President Trump is doing, rather.
Only.
You mentioned the decision by the judge in Texas. The interesting thing about that is that you know, as we always say, to pay attention to who's appointing judges to the courts. The judge in Texas, who, in his decision to basically say that the Exxon case was not in the jurisdiction of the state of Texas, the judge who made that decision and who expressed some pro-Exxon sentiments as he made his decision was appointed to the bench by George W. Bush, and the judge who's hearing the case now in New York was appointed by Barack Obama. So if we have a ruling in that case that is, shall we say, disfavorable to the fossil fuel industry, that will reaffirm once again the importance of who's putting federal judges on the bench.
Yeah, but I agree with you, but boy, it's a sad thing for democracy when you're basically counting whose team each judge came from. You know, it's just you want to at least imagine that the judge is thinking, you know, well above the sort of partisan politics of who put him on the court. But anyway, D.R., we got to stop there. One of the things that I did want to tell everyone, so it's spring has sprung. It's a busy time. For climate activists, there's lots you can do. And I just wanted to mention some activities and dates that you can take part in. And you'll have to go to the Mass Climate Action, the event page on the blog page, in order to find out more detail. I'll put the links into the podcast blog as well. But here's the deal. On the 8th of April, which is this coming Saturday at 1 o'clock in the town of Worcester, Massachusetts, there will be a tour of the wind turbine at a site there in Worcester. So go to the website if you can make it. If you've never been to a wind turbine, it's a pretty cool thing. I mean, it really is very impressive to stand under a wind turbine. On the 19th of April, 4/19, which is just after tax day, right? Tax day is delayed this year because of things. Anyway, on 4/19 at 8 o'clock in the evening, MCAN will be holding an online webinar to discuss the legislative priorities that the Massachusetts Climate Action Network has for Beacon Hill State House, for the Massachusetts Legislature. It'll be a very interesting discussion. You can sign up online. Please do that. If you have the time, you can do it from the comfort of your own home. It's a pretty cool thing. Even if you're not in Massachusetts, but you want to find out what's going on, sign up. You can connect over the internet tubes from any place in the world, and you'll be in the thick of things. Keep in mind that on April 22nd, the following Saturday, is the March for Science, right? There are marches in Washington, D.C., but there is a sister march on Boston Common, which would be a big day if you can make it. And then, so I intend to go to the Science March in Boston on the 22nd, but then a week later on the 29th of April, which will mark the 100th day of Comrade Trump's presidency, the People's Climate March will be happening across the country. It's going to be the biggest one we think will be in Washington, D.C. I intend to go to the one in Washington, D.C. There are buses from Massachusetts. If you want to catch a bus ride down, leaving Friday night, be there Saturday, come back Saturday night, that's still possible. We'll put up a link to that. But at the same time, there's a big event happening on Boston Common. There'll be an MCAN group there. Sign up with the MCAN group, and you'll have someone to hang around with. That's all happening at the zoo, as Simon and Garfunkel once said. So there you go, dear. I'm going to put up links to all that stuff, plus most of what we talked about on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us as well, a link on Facebook that'll click through to the blog and to the SoundCloud icon. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud. And just this past week, we got on Google Play. So if you use Google Play on your Android phone, please check us out. See if you can find us. I think there's some funky thing about trying to find the podcast on an Apple phone in Google Play. I don't know. Those guys are duking it out at a very high level, right? But, I mean, if you have an Android, I'm told you can get to our podcast on Google Play. And, of course, you can get to us on iTunes, right? We always are. I just want to say that I oftentimes retweet my friend D.R. Tucker's tweets about the show. I tweet at Ted McIntyre 100. You can find me. And, D.R., you are much more attuned to things. You're at Dr. Tucker, right?
Yes, that is correct.
At Dr. It looks like Dr. Tucker, but it's in fact Dr. Tucker, right?
Yes.
There you go. So if you want to follow Dr., I highly advise it. He has lots of great tweets. We'll close then where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, D.R., thank you very much for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. It was great having you along. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.